Thanks, Steve. Somebody asked me last week, are you meeting next week? And quite honestly, being the planner that I am and busy as I was, I hadn't even thought about it. So I'm glad we did because everybody showed up. And then I saw two or three newcomers signing in. I was thinking, you know, if you're coming tonight, you know, the night before a holiday, and this is the night you choose, you need to be here. And then I thought, well, or maybe it's obvious because it's a holiday, right? And tomorrow's not going to be a fun day. So, you know, any reason, welcome. I'm glad we're meeting. I think it's a very important lesson. I think that we're talking about the plan, and next week, the new sheriff. And then in a couple of weeks, we're gonna have some examples. We're going to have that night where we put a whiteboard up here and work through some plans and what we'd like for you to do. It's been very helpful. I used to worry about it. And now everybody that's actually, because we don't pull any punches, we're kind and nice and whatever, but the point is to use some of your plans up on a whiteboard as an example to others and your diagrams and try to work through that. If you wanted the wise counsel of an entire room and all of the leadership, it's quite an opportunity. And we won't mention names and whatever, but I'd like for you to pray about that and talk to your group about it. And they're going to talk to you later. So that's going to be in 2 weeks, and then we'll start a new curriculum cycle after that. So why did you come to Prodigal? If you like where you are, keep doing what you're doing. But before we go into to delve in that any sooner, I'm just going to read it. I think that reading this is a little more powerful for whatever reason. So I'm just going to read this. It's in your message. And I'm going to talk tonight about an aspect that's not, I'm going to flush out a small portion that I think is one of the most important parts of this message. But I don't, you know, this message that you've read here on plan is very important. It's very thorough. It gives you details if you're working on a plan. This is all inclusive, and it's a really good handout. But I'm going to talk a little bit about portions of this tonight. But I am going to keep the same story. So Dan and Brenda, who are a couple of our leaders now, after no children of their own and two failed adoption attempts, two children from Russia, age 9 and 11, almost fell in their lap, and they felt it was God at work. And so a few years later, this happened. It wasn't because we weren't looking for help. I think we were looking in every direction that we could, from counselors to lawyers to policemen. Sometimes we found sympathetic ears, but often people didn't really know what to do or say. It was very frustrating and very lonely to be in that situation. I knew that our family was totally out of control. It felt like I had two full-time jobs, and the second one was almost like war. I never knew if any of my family would be there when I came home from work. Sometimes the boys were taking off, and Brenda got to the point that she wanted to leave too. I could see that the wheels were falling off this thing, and I didn't have any more answers. I got to the point where I recognized I didn't have any control. That was a hard and scary place. I realized God didn't want me to have a sense of control, and I had to decide if I could really trust him with my life. That's when Dan and Brenda came to Prodigal. They needed a plan. And I'll finish up how that story ends in just a second, where we are in the process right now. But coming back to you, why did you come to Prodigal? There's several reasons. Your life could be out of control. You could really be tired of just the pain and the chaos, and you want some peace. You may want to come here because you find compassionate understanding. Or you just want to have hope that there might be a day where this could end. But most of you really want to come here also for all of those things and for a plan. And so I would ask you, a plan for what? What do you want to accomplish with your plan? Is it to have hope? Is it to eliminate the chaos? I think most of us, when we come in here, that would be a reasonable thing. If I could just make the pain stop and eliminate the chaos and let the circus, you know, slow down, that would be enough of a plan. But what do you want to accomplish, and is the plan, the big paradigm shift here, is the plan for your prodigal, or is the plan for you? And the answer is,
for you.
There you go. But let's talk about that for a minute for some of the people, and maybe even the newcomers that came in tonight, and they may already have this figured out, but if you do, you're way ahead of the game, because most of it takes us a long time and working through several plans to keep reminding ourselves that this is, because we can all get caught back up, even when we know that. How many of us know that's the answer? And then we set boundaries and consequences and work on our plan, and we realize we've just set something to control them, not us, right? It happens. We fall back in that. So if I ask most of you if the plan could accomplish that that your prodigal's rebellion stops, they graduate from their school, wherever they're going, they get a job or financial independence, they're responsible, they're drug free, they come to their senses, they walk with God. That could be your husband, your wife, your mother. I mean, it doesn't have to be a kid. If all of your prodigal achieve those goals, that would be a very successful plan. The problem is, can your plan control any one of those things? Could your plan ever stop the rebellion, make them graduate from school, graduate, be responsible, be drug-free, come to their senses, or walk with God? The answer is, there is no plan that can do that, okay? There's plans that might help that, but they can't do that. But if the plan is for you, and you want peace and order and end to your chaos, if you want to be trained by the experience, this prodigal chaos, this prodigal hell, to have peace and righteousness in your life, as Hebrews 12 promises it will, if you want to lead your family well, if you want to know God or walk more closely with Him, if you want to glorify God and trust Him and be obedient and have faith, this is a really good news. You can accomplish all that with your plan. Every one of those things can happen. If you have a good plan and you follow it, that can happen. I promise you, 100%. Now, having that happen is why this is a 20-week curriculum that many of you have taken 17 times, okay? But it can happen, all right. So what does a prodigal win look like? What is a good plan? You know, for us, if you can only control yourself, what would be awesome? Not that I have my worth in your outcome, I don't, but I do, I'm pumped when I see transformation. It's like crazy good. So if you came in here and you sit in that newcomer group like so many do every week, and they're, you've seen, you know, the posture, the slumping posture, the Kleenex that's abounds at that table. And if you could leave at some point in the future and you had a firm hope in Jesus Christ, that your story of grace was based on Him alone, and then you could own it, and that you had a greater knowledge of God. I read Ephesians, I think it's 1:17-19 in the last day or two when I was looking at this. I mean, what an incredible prayer that Paul prays for the Ephesians to say. He prays, you know what he prays for them for? He prays for them to have an ever-increasing knowledge of God. And I went, why did it take me 63 years to figure that out, right? That Paul knew it then, it's been the word. That's what he prayed for his people for one thing above else, that they would know Him, that they would have a greater understanding. And if you left with a knowledge of who He was and a clarity of purpose, that your identity was as a child of God and your purpose was to glorify Him and a plan, that's a win. That is a win. So that's what a plan will help you do. So a plan needs to be written. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about diagrams tonight. And a plan that's theoretically mashed around and talked about is never congealed. I've never seen a prodigal yet that when pushed on a non-written plan said, I don't remember it like that. I don't remember. That's not how I remember it. Right. They never remember it that way, okay? Because it's not written down. You got to write it down. And it seems disciplined and over the top, but trust me, a plan is written because the devil is in the details. It says, I'm here about the details, and that's the devil. So what do you need? So I'm going to depart here for a little bit. I was really thinking about this, about what you really need in a plan. I'm going to really think about more from 30,000 feet here. So I'm not talking about prodigal plan right now. That's part of it. It applies. But if you were going to develop any plan, at work, a problem at home, getting home, what you do is you would define the problems, the obstacles. If I got to get home, you know, one of the obstacles is I've got four choices. I can go east, west, north, or south, or somewhere in between. I got to do that. Or whatever your problem is, if you don't define what your problem in the chaos is, how can you develop a plan to solve it if you don't know what the problem is? I was talking to a guy this week and talking about a prodigal. And I said, well, I think they're doing better and this, that, and the other. And but he's not broken and this, that, and the other. And this was an addict. And so I kind of wanted to give him the benefit of doubt a little bit. And the guy just matter-of-factly just, until they realize they're not, until they come to the realization that they're an addict and that's the problem, we're wasting our time here. And so you've got to define the problem. The other thing you'd have to do is you'd have to define your purpose. What do you need to develop a plan? Well, you've got to know what you really want to be about. So if you define the problem, there's many ways to solve a problem. There's a quick fix that people might do and get in trouble with the Securities Exchange Commission. And they would have no moral grounds to, I mean, that would be they wouldn't think about a moral rules to follow. But if your purpose is to glorify God, or if it's to get rich quick, or if it's whatever it is, you've got to define what you're going to be willing to do to solve that problem. And do you have principles that you have to abide by in solving that problem? And remember, we're going to define the problems. So once you do that, what are your goals? What would you like to see? You know what the problem is. You know what your purpose is and how you want to navigate the situation. And then what would you like to see the goal be based on your purpose? And then identifying those obstacles. What's going to get in my way? Fears primarily. So do you see how that applies to all we're trying to do when you come in here is that we're trying to figure out, we use diagrams. So I was in a group a few weeks ago, and they were talking about a lot of problems, but we weren't taking any ground. Everyone agreed on one thing, that their problem was tough. And it was compassionate, it was truthful, but I was thinking, hey, what are we, so I asked, I said, what do you think your diagrams are used for? Did you work on your diagram? Well, we worked on it, but we hadn't worked on it a lot. Now, some groups are working on it all the time. Some people don't work it all the time. And I'm just trying to say that it jumped out to me that maybe we would use this lecture tonight to figure it out because there was a blank stare. I'm not really sure what we use those for. So I want to actually tell you what the purpose of that is and why this has been such a game changer for Prodigal. Because unlike a 4th of July night when we've probably got half the people, if you haven't figured it out, we've got a lot more people here lately, and it's directly related to working on diagrams. We never had a problem bringing people to Prodigal, but we had people that would actually go out the back door a little bit because they couldn't come up with a plan. It seemed overwhelming, and now leadership is bringing the potential diagram to you. So I believe it's the same thing. The reason people left was the same reason I used to work in community here at Watermark. We went from 8 groups to 800 groups. And the number one reason people left community, the number one reason people thought they left community was because people got in their stuff. And you know the number one reason they left community is because they didn't need another social group. They didn't get in their stuff. They wanted to take ground. They wanted to be better. And truth was not spoken. So these diagrams speak truth. They define your chaos. That's all they are. They are a picture of the chaos in your life. Your chaos are the problems that brought you here. And if you don't write them down, you lose sight of them from week to week. You rehash, and I think you waste time. And it allows you to postpone doing things that are hard. But if you define the problem and it doesn't change, you process the initial diagram. In other words, the thought of this is that it's just one of our wise leaders just said, I think it's overwhelming to people. The reason people don't do plans is because they don't even know how to start. So we do. So now what we're doing is we would bring you we get your story of grace. We get your purpose statement. We get all the things that you do in newcomers group, and your leader processes that. He or she also talks to you for the first week or two and finds out, and they just throw a diagram up that may be right or may be wrong, but it's the best they have, and it's a start. And they've spent an hour or two on that to try to figure you out and say, is this your chaos? And you have the opportunity to process that and sharpen that and say, no, I think we are on the same page. Okay, so why did you give them the car and you said it wasn't a good idea? That's why I've got you separated. In other words, those kind of things need to be discussed. And what that does, it brings your whole group in and they start to buy in. They see your problem in front of you. They see you arguing for the truth of that or the not truth of that. And you get to ask questions. And if you can spend a couple of 3 weeks on that, looking at where the truth in your prodigal on that diagram, the truth in you on that diagram, talk about the obstacles that might occur, then all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 weeks, there may be some confusion initially, but we can all come to an agreement that that is your problem. And on that diagram, you're going to have probably some enablement, which would be those red barricades. And the point is that you'd say, hey, the problem is that you're not willing to enforce a boundary here. The wife doesn't feel safe here. How can we shore up the fact that she feels threatened, or you know, there's a safety issue, or whatever those are, and they'll be defined. And then once you define that, you can come up with plans to change all those bad boundaries, those enabling behaviors, the problems and the reason that we brought you here, and firm up strong boundaries, and your plan comes out of the diagram. The diagram is not your plan. The diagrams are your problems that tell you what to do. They make it easy in black and white. It identifies the obstacles you face in setting appropriate boundaries, and it allows you to produce a plan. I would also tell you diagrams are a tool. Now the plan is like this long-term plan, but I was thinking about it this weekend, and the diagram is a tool you could use every week. It can be specific every single week. For example, a couple of things that I saw in some groups were, do you take away the cell phone? All right, if I was in that group and somebody was saying, we've got a problem, do I take away data? Do I take away the phone altogether? How do I take away the navigation system? Is there a safety issue? Well, you could make an argument in 10 different scenarios to do any one of those things. You got to do something that you can live with. And your diagram, that should be on your diagram, and you define that. You work through it. You ask the questions. That's one of your boundaries. The cell phone is one of the things that they cherish, your prodigal cherishes. You have prodigal behavior. You work through that. And you never have to bring up the cell phone issue again. Because if you don't have a diagram, you've got 3 people absent. They come next week. They don't know. You might not show up. And 3 weeks later, you're still talking about the cell phone. Right? So my point is on a diagram, we go, this is your plan for the cell phone. You take away the data. You don't worry about the navigation. I didn't have navigation in 1973. I turned out okay. Okay? My parents had no way to contact me in 1973. I turned out okay. It's not the end of the world, okay? But you need people in your group to work through it. You have a plan, and that's what happens. You worry about your safety. You figure out, I don't know what the answer was that night. I didn't know it well enough because I was visiting. But in your group, you bring their diagram back up, and you go, I didn't know about this. Let's add this to the diagram. This is an issue about safety. Let's work through it tonight and come up with a plan. You can add to your plan about safety, and you can use it as a tool each week to add to your plan. So it's a very practical thing. We're not just doing it because it's just a whim. It's actually very useful. I think diagrams eliminate Groundhog Day. You know, you just don't keep, it doesn't just keep coming up. You deal with it, right? It's not a Bill Murray movie, right? It's just, and you're going to say that's good, but I know what you're thinking. I'm coming to that. And then leaders take the lead to overcome this inertia. In other words, so relax. We realize that it's you're coming here, you're overwhelmed, you want a plan, you don't even know how to start. If you knew how to come up with a plan and have wise counsel, you wouldn't be here in the first place. So we're going to take the initiative, gladly, willingly. And we do those feedback, the questions. We refine and redefine. We talked about that. And you use those diagrams specifically each week for those individual questions. And you use it globally as you as your plan develops. And you, now you know how to deal with the cell phone issue and the safety issue and the college issue and all those issues that come up. And so let me go back up and summarize it a little bit. The chaos is clearly defined, and the time in the group is more efficient, and you're focusing on actions and not words, right? 1 John 3:18 said, "Dear children, let us not worship with words and tongue, but with action and in truth." And so here's the point, right? You're coming here on Tuesday night, you know, you might be missing your favorite TV show. Or the World Cup reruns. So don't waste your time, right? I mean, isn't it fun to see somebody take ground, come up with a plan, and feel enabled? I saw somebody in the back. I was in a group, and I encouraged him on my way in because we had done one of these things and walked through this and came up with an issue on cell phones. And I came back and visited last week, and they just couldn't wait to tell me that he had taken ground and done that the very next week, and he'd been waiting for a year trying to process all this. And he took ground, and I wanted him to know that everybody in that group was encouraged that he took ground, and he had been vacillating. And it happened because we really spoke truth in there and said, bro, you know, you've waited long enough. I mean, do it or don't do it, but what's the truth in this? And it was really helpful. So time becomes efficient, and it's more likely you'll come next week because you're not wasting your time. You're helping others, you're encouraged, and you're saying, you know what, maybe I'm going to throw my issue up there and I'm going to deal with it and take some ground. So that's where I think diagrams important. It's a tool to answer your questions that we talked about. And it should be dynamic all the time because there's new questions that come up and that adds to your plan. It's a each week you work through those diagrams and you know it reminds you of your purpose, what your fears are, these boundaries that, oh yeah, I remember you had that enablement going on. Is that still going on? Is the grandmother still coming behind and give them $100 a week? Is that still going on? I mean, if it is, let's eliminate that. And then it helps you to do that, and it changes dynamically. And here's the problem, right? It all sounds good up until this point, because diagrams, it focuses you on exactly what the problems are, and it becomes really simple to understand. And the problem is, it becomes really hard to do, right? Because it's simple. Now you know exactly what to do. You have wise counsel. You got to take away the cell phone. You got to, you know, forget navigation, cause a pit in your stomach. Forget the call at prom, pit in your stomach. I mean, it's hard to do. But if it is hard to do and it does cause a pit in your stomach, you've identified the problem. So guess what? You can't do it because you don't trust God. So you've just signed up for another 20 weeks of prodigal, okay? And it's okay because we've all done it. It took me nine years to figure it out in my journey, right? Because I didn't have this group to help me. So you're ready for a prodigal plan when, you know, you want the truth, you can't handle the truth. I think you're ready for a plan when you work your diagram and you can finally handle the truth. The truth, I think there's three truths you need to figure out. I broke it down a little bit differently tonight. When you work your diagram and you can finally handle the truth about your prodigal and the chaos that really defines you, you'll find that in the diagram. And when you can finally handle the truth about God and who He is, and that might be in your mission statement and your purpose statement, and then finally the truth about you. And when you know the truth about those three things, and you accept them, and you acknowledge them and you own them, you're there. You can work the diagram. You can come up with a plan. So let's talk about the truth about your prodigal. You see your prodigals, they really are. They're sinners and they're lost. The good, the bad, the ugly. They're not the bad. I mean, they're not, they don't hang out with a bad crowd. They're the bad crowd. Okay? That's okay. And you evaluate their actions. I mean, why should I give them this? Well, you know, last night they just came in and he just curled up and he just told me he loved me. You know, I mean, I thought that B&W would be the perfect response. Okay? But you evaluate their actions and not words. And the reason we laughed is it's too close to home, right? And so, but if you know who the prodigal is, and they're a sinner just like us, you know, we, in there but the grace of God go I. And then you learn the truth about God. And I threw this in because I was reading a Keller chapter this week, and boy, I've just never thought about what he talked about, that it's all kind of summed up in the garden, the cross, and the resurrection, and not to give you an entire different sermon, but he was just talking about the importance of the garden and why Christ was, why he was bleeding, he was sweating blood, why he said, take this cup from me. It was almost like a paradigm shift. Why? Stay with me. Stay up with me. And Keller makes the point that in that moment, he came to the realization of what he was about to face. And he was asked to do something no one ever has done in history. To suffer and die needlessly. I mean, for nothing he deserved. We have all deserved death. But he took the sins of the entire world and he went to the cross knowingly. So if he died for us, we would be forgiven. But if he didn't know what he was about to go through, it wouldn't be love. And I never thought about that. If he didn't have the full realization, being a human, knowing what he had to go through, if he didn't have a choice, that wouldn't be love. It would just be forgiveness. So if you could understand, to me, it really hit me because you know that's important to me. God's put that on my heart so much and it just jumped off the page because if he was perfect and he didn't need to and it wasn't his fault and he knew it and he knew the pain and he did it anyway, we're not just forgiven, we're loved by the King. That's important. So if you know who God is, and know who your prodigal is, then you can know the truth about yourself, that we're enablers and we're knuckleheads and we're sinners, just like your own son and daughter or spouse, and if you know the truth that we're responsible, Ezekiel 33, if you don't blow the trumpet, the blood's on your head. I mean, it's on your head as well as the prodigal's. If you don't know that verse, ask about it in closed group tonight. That you should discipline your son and that there's hope. Don't be a willing party to their death. A hot-tempered man must pay the penalty and you be convicted by that. That's the truth of who we are to be and we are enables. But because you know he loves us, he knew what he was getting into and he did it purposely and that he did it for us, then we're forgiven and we're loved unconditionally and nothing can separate us from God and he'll never leave us or forsake us and we can trust our children and we can trust our prodigal with him. Now you're ready. You know the truth about God. You know the truth about your prodigal and your chaos, and you know the truth about yourself. So I'm going to finish with that knowledge, and I'm going to read. Not every prodigal story turns out perfectly. Not every prodigal comes home. But every once in a while, we need to rejoice. Okay, so I'm going to read you. Dan and Brenda needed to come. They needed a plan. So years later, they develop a plan here in Prodigal. With the help of the Prodigal Family Ministry, they painfully, faithfully followed it. There was no guarantee of outcome, and I will tell you, I've said this before, in the years that I've been here, I personally can't remember, I'm not trying to rank you people, you know, rank you guys, my friends, But they don't get any worse than Dan and Brenda's kids, okay? That prodigal situation was out of control. Two adopted kids from Russia. The rebellion was crazy. It was overwhelming to me. I remember going to the parking lot one night and say, I have no idea how you're going to solve this problem. So here we are years later. They developed a plan. These are quotes from Dan and Brenda. The hardest thing was asking Nathan to leave our home. I could see it coming for almost a year before it happened. As we watched the direction of our boys' lives careening towards self-destruction, I asked him to leave, and that was the hardest thing for me. He left the house with very little money, no job, no driver's license. He had never learned to drive, no car. He walked out the door with a suitcase. It was not an easy morning watching him pack. I feel like we've learned that God really can help you live in the midst of turmoil, doing what he has called you to do. Before we came to Prodigal, we allowed our boys to take control of our lives. I was not available to the Lord or living victoriously. It was consuming me. I believe the Lord has taught me things that I would never have learned otherwise. God has also shown me that letting our son suffer and letting him reach his bottom is part of loving him. Now we can see that our suffering was God allowing us to go through a process that helped us learn who he was and who we were. We had gotten to the point where we could say, Lord, whatever it takes to get him where you want him to be, I'm all in. Nathan began this nine-month journey of absolute, utter failure in everything he did. He was fired from jobs. He lived with friends. He was repeatedly kicked out. Within 9 months, he was on the streets and destitute. Nathan was finally desperate enough to listen to someone, maybe for the first time in his life. He chose to go into rehab. He went in as a non-believer, but 3 months later, he listened to the voice of the Lord and accepted Christ as his Savior. When we came into Prodigal, it was a great reassurance to hear that this could actually be about me. I realized that my boys weren't changing at all, but I was changing. I was learning things I'd never learned before. I was learning more about who God was and seeing myself more clearly. The most amazing part is seeing a new baby Christian, our son Nathan, ministering to other people. How does that happen? And that's going on today. And this was written at a time when they adopted two boys, and that was Nathan, and Luke was still on the streets. So later in their journey, and this is about a year ago, because I had my hip replacement and then Dan followed by breaking his hip, and he was recovering literally from emergency surgery to repair his fractured hip. And I remember Don, this was an email that was sent to the leadership, and I just put it in here, and Dan said, seriously, and he's recovering, he said, seriously, it is amazing to see Ephesians 3:20 in this. Last evening, Brenda contacted Breaking Free to inform Luke, our youngest prodigal, about my accident in hip. This is the one that was still on the streets initially when Nathan accepted Christ. And while in his program, they keep the guys on a pretty short leash for obvious reasons. Normally, the guys get a 5 to 10 minute call each weekend to a family member. Imagine any 21-year-old restricted to 10 minutes a week. Luke's been there 11 months, which is miraculous. Luke got a 20-minute call to me last night, and we talked about how, so we got 10 minutes, but Luke got a 20-minute call to me last night, and we talked about how he was doing, and he asked me advice on how to better process some of the accountability things he struggles with in the program. Then at 18 minutes into the conversation, he stops and asks if he can pray for me. Were it not for a broken leg, I might have fallen out of bed. Then for two of the more memorable minutes in my life, my prodigal son prayed a beautiful prayer for his dad. Then today I got to share with one of my nurses our prodigal journey, about our prodigal journey. God's good all the time. The last time I gave this a few months ago, I wasn't able to say this, but this is a picture of Dan and Brenda and Nathan and Luke in that order. And Nathan, remind you, was the one that came to Christ first, and Luke is the one that prayed for his dad on the ride. And 2 months later, he was baptized, and that was a couple of months ago at a meeting. They're doing great. So I went through the whole thing until the last second before I started crying, but it's a record for me. I've never been able to read that, but I'm not saying that following your plan and doing your diagrams leads to an outcome, because you can't control the outcome, right? But it absolutely changed Dan and Brenda, and it set an environment that allowed their kid to come home. They couldn't control that, but without that, a plan does have an impact on your kids. And I just wanted to encourage you with that. And so I hope that God will open your eyes and give you the strength to work on your diagrams and face the truth and find out who your prodigal is, who God is, and who you are, and glorify him in what you do. Lord, I just thank you for your words, how you blessed me in the privilege of being here, how it was good for me, Jay Burns, to be afflicted, that I might learn from your decrees, that I might be the man that I wanted to be but didn't know how to be until you put a thorn in my flesh. And so, as crazy as it sounds, I thank you. I would not be where I am. I would not have this privilege without the journey you've put me on. So I feel like Joseph, no problem. This is why I know the plans you had for me. So I pray that everyone could get to that point and to realize that they don't want to miss the opportunity and the pain they're suffering to be the men and women they need to be, that this country needs, this world needs. And this is just one of the troubles that's going to shape them and make them into a light on a hill. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.